So we've been looking at some lessons on building our faith in God, that you may believe, John 20:31, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. Hebrews 11:6, but without faith it is impossible to please him, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Again, this series is built on a series of books, Rock Solid Faith. We're looking at how to build our faith, how to sustain it, how to defend it. We're looking at, still looking at building it right now. In a previous lesson, we looked at seven reasons to believe in the existence of God. We looked at nine different excuses that people give for not believing in God. Last week, we looked at the case for the existence of God. We talked about the law of the excluded middle. This law states that an object cannot both possess and not possess a certain trait or characteristic at the same time and in the same fashion. So the simple fact is, either God exists or he does not exist. If one person says he exists and another says he does not exist, both cannot be right. One is right and one is wrong. There's no middle ground. There's no middle ground in this. We looked last week at the law of cause and effect, the cosmological argument, talking about the cosmos. This has been one of the most effective arguments for the existence of God. This addresses the fact that the universe or the cosmos is here, and therefore it must be explained in some fashion. When we think about that, there are three possible considerations for the universe. That it's eternal, it's always existed and always will. Or the universe is not eternal, rather it created itself out of nothing. And then the third possibility, the universe is not eternal, it did not create itself out of nothing. Rather, it was created by something or someone outside and superior to itself. Again, this is the law of cause and effect, and it's universally accepted in every field of science. It also states that no effect can be qualitatively superior to or quantitatively greater than its cause. We don't use language like that too often, but basically it's saying whatever is created is not greater than the Creator. If we go out and look in the parking lot and we see a car, we know that car had to come from somewhere. It didn't just exist. We understand that there was some cause behind this, and the Creator of that car is greater than the car. Since the effect can never precede or be greater than the cause, then stands the reason that the cause of life must be living intelligence, which itself is both moral and loving. When the Bible records in the beginning God, it makes known to us just such a first cause. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. We have time, force, action, space, and matter. The central message of this argument and the law of cause and effect is this: every material effect must have an adequate antecedent cause. The universe is here, intelligent life is here, morality is here, love is here. What is it that caused this? So that leads us to the lesson tonight. And again, these are in a very logical order. So we've looked at reasons, excuses people give for not believing, the case for the existence of God, and then once we understand that there is a God, we understand that we need a revelation from God so that we can understand God. So we're going to talk about revelation and truth for a few minutes this evening. Getting a message. And we understand this in so many different ways. You have a radio station you like to listen to. There has to be some source that transmit that message, and then there has to be a receiver that receives that message. You have a radio station, you have a radio, you have a listener. Simple, easy to understand. Well, God is sending us a message. God is the sender, we are the receiver, and His revelation is the message that He sends to us. But we need a revelation. So what is the truth of the matter? Where did we come from? Did we come from some slime billions and billions and billions of years ago? Why are we here? What is our purpose for being here? Can we really know? We need a truthful, accurate record of life. And as I was thinking of slides to go along with this, we need the truth. And one popped in my mind. There are plenty of examples. Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts. I think most of us here recognize Jack Webb, and he was famous for this line. Just the facts. Don't tell me any stories. Don't make anything up. We just want to know the facts. We just want to know the truth. Truth represents a reality that transcends everything. Most of us, we want to obtain a certain amount of knowledge that we can put to use in our everyday lives. We want to be educated, whether formally or informally. We want to know the truth about the matter. Whether it's how to be a carpenter and build a house, how to be a mechanic and work on a car, how to do this, how to do that. We want a doctor to know the truth so that he can practice medicine. And we understand most people prefer not to be deceived. We base our life on truth. We don't want to go to the grocery store and give them so much money for what we buy, and then they deceive us and don't give us the correct amount of change. One of the Ten Commandments, in fact, was based upon just such a concept: thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. We need the truth. We want the truth. Truth has always been the basis for moral, legal, ethical codes of nations. An abiding respect of truth has been the foundation of the legitimacy of those codes. And when we see that eroding, we know that a system is not going to last. Proverbs writer says, buy the truth and sell it not. John 8:32, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. So when you talk about truth, that also implies that there is falsehood out there. But we want to know the truth. We want to know what God has told us, what God has revealed to us. And again, there are going to be people that lead us astray. Paul wrote to Timothy, chapter 3, verse 1, but know this, that in the last days perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. You read this and you think he's talking about April 2nd, 2023. Unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. And from such people, turn away. For of this sort are those who creep into households and make captives of gullible women, loaded down with sins, led away by various lusts, always learning and never being able to come to the knowledge of the truth. People have all of these beliefs, these philosophies. They are always studying. They never come to the truth because they don't open God's truth and read it. Now, the one that possesses correct knowledge, he's got the ability to discern and then act upon truth. When we have the truth, when we have knowledge, that frees us from the shackles of ignorance. Truth frees us from the shackles of error. A lot of people that are in the wrong religiously, they are in chains. They are shackled. They are bound because they are ignorant of the truth which God has revealed to us. So knowledge and truth are very precious commodities. We should always want the truth, no matter who we hear it from, no matter how we hear it. We should always want the truth. And while almost anyone you ask will admit in theory that knowledge and truth are indispensable, in practice, people live out that daily existence as if knowledge and truth ultimately do not matter. They make up whatever they want. It's true today, false tomorrow. They do not live. They think that the truth is relative. They don't think the truth is absolute, so they can go in any direction they want. So much of mankind lives according to abstract, confusing, inconsistent system of personal behavior. This is a bit odd, to say the least. In most matters, a man likely will insist upon complete objectivity. We want the truth. We want the truth, just the facts. You think about our eating habits. Somebody might say, I'm not going to eat this food. It contains bacterial toxins that'll kill me. Well, that's just your opinion. No. If I know this, if I'm reading a label and it has poison putting in there, I want the truth. I don't want your subjective opinion of matters. In regards to matters of civil law, we might say that action is illegal. It violates my rights. So somebody wants to come and build a garage in your backyard, and you say, uh-uh, this is the property line. That's yours. This is mine. Well, that's what you think. I think I can build a garage over here. You see, truth transcends everything else. Truth is so important. But we have people in our everyday life. We have people in politics. We have people in religion that want to make truth whatever they are saying at the time. Now consider, if a person cannot know with certainty that God exists, and that's one of the thrusts behind the series, that we can know with certainty that God exists. If they do not know that, then he cannot know that the Bible is his inspired word. If a person cannot know that the Bible is the inspired word of God, then he cannot know that Jesus is God's son, because the Bible provides evidence necessary for such a claim. If a person cannot know that Christ is God's son, then he cannot know that he is saved. Yet John specifically stated, these things I have written to you, that you may know that ye have eternal life. You see, we all have friends, we all have family, that they think there's something about religion, but they just don't believe in God. They want to believe in their version of God. So we need a revelation from God. With the existence of God established, becomes reasonable to think that a creator God would wish to communicate with his creation. And this is a point I made last week. Where did man come up with the idea of God with a supreme being if man came from nothing? How could man come up with that? He couldn't. God had to reveal himself to us. And then we see how man has taken and perverted that. So you have many different nations and religions that had some type of belief in some type of God. Mankind shows evidence of intelligence, kindness, goodness, justice, many other unique characteristics. Since it is inconceivable that the Creator could be inferior to his creation in any fashion, and since the effect is never greater than the cause, the inevitable that God would exhibit infinite intelligence, kindness, goodness, justice, etc. So back in Genesis, when we read, and God made man in his own image, this is part of the image that we are made in of God. Our intelligence, our emotions, our kindness, our goodness, our justice. We are created in the image of God. And we have these qualities in a very finite amount. God has them in an infinite amount because He is the creator, we are the created. So some form of personal communication between the intelligent creator and the intelligent creature would be expected. Or else, how could mankind ever come to know, appreciate certain aspects about the creator? How could we know about God if he didn't reveal himself to us? How could we understand what the creator might possibly require of the beings that he created us? You know, you go back to that slide with them building a car, a Model T on an assembly line. They created that car for a purpose. Anybody that makes things, basically anybody that's in business that makes something, they are making it for a purpose. God made us for a purpose. He created us for a purpose. What is that purpose he created us for? To worship him, to bring honor and glory to him. But a revelation from the Creator would need to instruct mankind in different areas. How would we know about the character of God if he did not reveal himself to us? How would we know about the origin of evil if he did not reveal that to us? How would we know about our own origin if God did not reveal that to us in his word? How would we know about our purpose if he did not reveal that to us? How would we know about our destiny if he did not reveal that to us? Now, when we think about a revelation from God, revelation from God could take almost any form. God could choose to communicate with his creation directly by word of mouth. And he did that back in the beginning with the patriarchs. He spoke directly to the heads of the households, word of mouth. That's not the only way that God spoke, though. God also spoke through messengers, through angels. God spoke through dreams and visions. Just like we looked about last week with Nebuchadnezzar, where Nebuchadnezzar had some different dreams. And it's interesting, too, as we pointed out, that God used dreams a lot of times with the heathens, with the Gentiles, because that's how they believe their gods communicated to them. So God uses their method of communicating to them, but their people couldn't explain the dreams, only someone from God. He could choose any means that suited the occasion. He's the creator. Hebrews 1:1, God who at sundry times in his divers manners spake in time past unto the fathers by the prophets. And the King James Version, the New King James Version, makes it a little clearer. God who at various times and in various ways spoke in time past to the fathers by the prophets. So God has used different ways of revealing himself down through time. However, the most appropriate medium for long-term results would be one that ensured permanence, a written revelation. That would withstand the test of time. It could be passed faithfully from generation to generation throughout human history. So back to the Old Testament, there is a lot of things that were not written down. They weren't written down. When Jesus was tempted by Satan in the wilderness in Matthew chapter 4, what did Jesus say? Did he say, you know, the oral law back in the Old Testament? He didn't say that. Every time he said, it is written. And you see, God's plan, God's wisdom back from the beginning for certain things to be written down, to be recorded, never to be changed for all time. And a written form could be duplicated and distributed as needed, benefiting the whole of mankind across the ages. People say, well, today I still get prophecies from God. I still have dreams. Well, is that consistent with what God says, or is that contrary to what God says? Because God has revealed all things to us that pertain to life and godliness. This is the perfect law of liberty. It is complete. It is finished. It is not to be added to. So a written form. The question then becomes, is there evidence that mankind possesses such a revelation? And the answer to that is yes. Evidence does exist to establish the claim that God has given mankind his revelation in written form known as the Bible. Again, some man didn't just sit down somewhere, go out and sit under a tree and write this book. And we're going to look later at more of the things about internal evidences of the Bible. But you think about how many men wrote it over how many years on different continents and different languages, and it all fits together perfectly. God's written revelation makes it clear that in the past, he provided the revelation in a variety of ways. The works of his creative genius, Psalm 19. Psalm 19, we can look around and see everything and know that God exists. He revealed himself in a direct word-of-mouth fashion, Genesis 3, 9 through 16. He revealed himself through visions and dreams. Examples throughout the prophets and with the patriarchs also. He provided a revelation through angels. He provided a revelation in a still small voice, 1 Kings 19:12. He replied a revelation by the mouth of a donkey. And when people go on about they have a revelation and they lift themselves up about how special they are, that God has revealed himself to them today, they're deluded. But they also need to be reminded that the person was just a mouthpiece for God's word, and here God uses a donkey. God revealed himself in a bright cloud. God's greatest revelation of himself, however, was in the person of his son, Jesus Christ. John 3:16, 14:9, Colossians 2:9. The Word was in the beginning. The Word was with God. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. That revelation. That's how we know that God exists. The signs and wonders and miracles that he did. God revealed himself to us in these eight different ways, at least eight, and the climax of that was God himself coming down in the form of a man to speak to us. John 20:30, and truly Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. John wasn't just talking to the people at that time, but they were written for us also, for everyone that lives until Christ returns. B.C. Goodpasture wrote, "The nature and contents of the Bible are such that many of the readers in all generations have recognized God as its author. Man could not have written such a book if he could, and he could not if he would. It moves on a superhuman plane in design, in nature, and in teaching. It caters not to worldly desire, ambition." That's what a lot of people want to read about, how to succeed and make money and do this and that. "It condemns much which men in the flesh highly prize, and commends much that which they despise." You think about that. You want to, you get the books today, the books that sell, how to rise to the top, how to be king of the mountain. And what does this book teach us? How to be humble, how to be lowly, how to be meek. So a book that teaches something like that wouldn't last or wouldn't sell many copies, right? Wrong. Because this isn't just any book. This is the revelation of God that stood the test of time. Heaven and earth will pass away, but this word will last. It'll stand forever. Its thoughts are not the thoughts of men. Another man has said, had God chosen not to reveal himself, man could never have known him. And man can never know more about God than what God chooses to disclose. See, back to what I said earlier. If God hadn't revealed himself to us, where would we have come up with this idea of God? It just couldn't happen. Why didn't God reveal everything to us? Whatever knowledge of God is available exists solely because God has chosen to make it known. This is his self-revelation. Always remember Deuteronomy 29:29. The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. So many people get distracted. They get sidetracked. I wonder why this happened. I wonder why that happened. Where did this person come from? What about this? What about that? If God didn't think it was important to reveal it, we don't need to worry about it. We need to focus on what he has revealed to us and be busy doing it. Lacking adequate revelation from God, we would not have accurate way of understanding what we need to know regarding God, his son, our place in the creation, and many other topics. How to live our life, how to have a family, how to be in society, how to get along with our neighbor. We would have no objective standard upon which to base ethics and morals. We would know little of the ministry and the message of Jesus of Nazareth. And thinking of the ethics and morals, again, truth is the foundation of what our society is based on. Truth, justice, the American way. Ethics and morals. Right is right, wrong is wrong. But the world wants to muddy that all up, muddy it up. We would have no information regarding the theological purpose of his crucifixion and resurrection. Why did Jesus come to the earth, and why did he have to die, and why was he nailed to the cross? God explains that to us. He revealed that to us in his word. They are essential ingredients to God's plan to offer a ruined man, sinful man, a way of escape from the devastating consequences of sin. See, God, this is the greatest book ever written. God has told us where we came from, why we're here, what our destination is going to be. It's going to be either one of two places, and how we can be to the place that is going to be best for us. If he didn't have a revelation, we wouldn't know how or anything about the church, what the church is, how to enter the church, how to be saved, how once we entered the church, how to worship God correctly. And see, a lot of people, again, today they don't do that. They don't worship God correctly because they don't read his word. They do not understand, again, matters of eternal destiny. They just think everybody's going to heaven. Was that what God said? If everybody's going to heaven, why did he prepare hell? He prepared two places, not one place. He prepared heaven for those that obey him. He prepared hell for those who do not obey him. Arthur Pink wrote, "If it were announced from a reliable source on a certain time, an angel is going to come down from heaven. An angel is going to come down and tell the world about heaven, about God, about everything that is in heaven, what is going to happen. If that were actually to happen, you couldn't find a place big enough for this angel to be to hear what is said. Once that angel came and spoke, the next day, everybody would be glued to their TV set, to their computer, to pick up a newspaper to see what that angel said, because they would want to know. And that's not going to happen, but something better than that happened. The Son of God came down. He gave us all of that information. He told us what heaven is like. He told us how to live. He told us everything. And then the people wake up every morning, can't wait to turn on the TV to find out about heaven. Can't wait to get on the computer, find out what the Son of God said. Can't wait to read the newspaper. See, they don't want to crack their Bible open and see what God says. They don't want to see what God says. It's one of the most important truth. It's one of the most important things that there is. We should be grateful to God for providing us with a revelation that could be retained in a permanent form, studied faithfully, and used profitably by all of mankind. I've used the example before with my brother Neil when we went to see him in the hospital right before he died. He died like the day after we saw him. And he told me all kinds of things that were very touching and was encouraging me and telling me about this and that. And I wish that I had written them down, because I remembered most of those things, and then it was kind of like a feeling. And the farther away from that time, I remember less and less about what he said. I didn't know he was dying. He knew he was dying. He had cancer. He didn't tell me. He said, I told him we were coming to visit, and he said, save your money. When I'm better, we'll get together and we'll do something. He knew he wasn't going to get better. He knew he was dying. I wish I had had his dying words written down. I don't. But friend, we have our brother Jesus Christ. We have his dying words written down. Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you, that where I am, there you may be also. We have the words of our dying brother written down in this revelation to last for all time, to give us comfort, to give us hope, to see us through the dark days. John 8:30, and he spoke these words. Many believed in him. Jesus said to the Jews who believed him, if you abide in my word, you are my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. They answered him, we are Abraham's descendants and have never been in bondage to anyone. How can you say you'll be made free? Jesus answered them, assuredly, most assuredly, I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave of sin. And a slave does not abide in the house forever, but a son abides forever. Therefore, if the Son makes you free, you shall be free indeed. You see, friends, that's the freedom that we really want. The freedom from sin, the freedom from bondage, that's what Christ came for. And when we know the truth, we can be set free from our sins. So we have a revelation, a book, and we can take this book and conquer the world. But we can't do it like this. We can't do it like this, just carrying it under our arm out in the world. We have to carry it in our heart. We have to carry it in our heart, and this revelation can change the world. So we've looked at excuses people give for not believing, the case for the existence of God, the need for a revelation from God. Next week, I'm planning on doing a revelation and inspiration. When we get down to this revelation, people have half a dozen different views of the inspiration of it, which affects how they live the life. So we're going to look at that. I want to close with a thought I touched on this morning, because you know, in this revelation, he tells us about his church. He tells us about his bride. He tells us that he's coming back. And I just want to repeat, when Christ is coming back, he's coming back for his wife, his bride, his church, that holy church, that holy bride without spot or wrinkle, and not some other men's wives or denominations, or not some group that wears the name of Church of Christ, but they aren't holy because they are spotted and have the world mixed in with them. Friends, we have the greatest revelation that exists. What are we doing with it? Friends, if there's anyone here this evening that needs to respond to the gospel invitation, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and sing.
Oh, we come home over there by the sun.